Yogi Maya, Reel 3. Yes, you were saying about meeting Hitler. Did you meet any of the other Nazi leaders?
Outside the university was the so-called Lustgarten, Leisure Gardens, which was a loose open area where the Nazis had very frequently public demonstrations. And Goebbels spoke. And we as students always went over to listen what they had to say. Thousands of people. And again, when Hitler spoke and when Goebbels spoke, there was the same experience that it was like an electric current which suddenly runs through all those people listening. A kind of mass hypnosis. And you, all of us who were not Nazis, we had to force with our left hand, holding down our right hand, not to join the others like everybody else to give the Nazi salute. We may not be accosted because of that. There are other people, but this feeling of a mass hysteria was amazing. And you can only probably find it now when you go to football. And the same behavior of the football hooligans, or the behavior of the yelling and shouting as are on their slogans. It's quite a similar thing, which the Romans, of course, knew. And I went to Berlin. I worked in Berlin as the youth officer for the Jewish youth who were non-Zionist groups and so on, editing my sports paper. And let me a normal time, in spite of the Nuremberg Law, until the Olympic Games were over. A little items which, one of them which has never been written about or made known. One day the police in Berlin decided that all Jews should have a special number plate for their cars, starting of 300,000 something with the 1A sign for Berlin. And whoever had a car, was Jewish, had to bring the car for testing to the normal testing stations, which we have now as well. This was a huge testing station. I was very proud of my very old vehicle. And I said, I'm going to have, he said, you are silly. Why do they have that number? It's an anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish things. Why must you go? I said, I go. It was a bit stubborn at that time, probably now still, but I went. Always with the feeling what they do to us is unjustified, is unfair, it can only last so long. This was a basic feeling which always came through with all my non-Jewish friends and all this. This is all, that is a fantasy, this cannot last. I went there, drove in front of me was the hearse of the Jewish community, or one of them, the Jewish community. Behind me, beautiful new Mercedes. And when I went at the end into a big shed where the lights had to be checked, before I even put up my lights, the chap said, your lights are squinting. I said, pardon? All Jewish cars have lights which are squinting. I said, I just had it in repair, you can understand. And I knew that I had to be tested, I didn't want to come with a defect car. Don't argue. Take your car out, have it repaired, bring it back tomorrow, and you'll get your new number. Jewish cemetery, the hearse had left already. So I went. When I came outside, it was like you have now outside a football stadium. All the touts were there, touting for your custom, wanting my car. So I ended in my car. I walked home off the bus and came back the next day. I saw my car hadn't been touched. If you're an owner of a car, you know whether anything has been done to it or not. There was nobody. I said, have you done it? He said, yes. I said, are you sure? Yes, of course I've done it. So he charged me 100 marks, which was a horrendous amount, probably the value of 100 pounds now. And I said, all right, you don't need to go back. Here's a piece of paper, show it to the fellow on the gate, and he will give you your new number. And now I'm full crash. I shut the window. I'm here.
Yes.
Then I had my queue number, and I had to drive through Berlin. This is important. The first policeman at the crossroad looked at me, and he stood in the middle of the crossroad because at that time we didn't have so many traffic lights as we have now. Many of them were done by the police. We called them Schupo, Schutzpolizei, Protection Police. And the Schupo with his special hat smiled at me and waved me on. When I came to the next one, he stopped me. I said, what does he want? He came slowly over to me and said, turn left. I said, why? I want to go straight on. He said, look, the next one is a Nazi. He will have you for some reason or not. Turn left, will you? He smiled at me and I went left. And I drove for a few days. And in August, my wife and I went to Schloss Marquardt, which was a famous restaurant, to celebrate our wedding. And when we came back, I drove up a road along the wood in the Hunewald, and I was told that use the arrows where you had to pay. When I drove along that road, suddenly a policeman came out of the wood with his dog. And in the whole world, it's the same when the police stops you. They let you sit on the walk very slowly around your car. And you sit there and say, what have I done? And finally, when they come to your window, he said, sir, good morning. Could you like to have a look at your papers? It's in the whole world the same. I've gone through this many times. And I gave him my papers, and he said, looked at my driving license, said, I haven't got my glasses here. I'm sorry, could you read it out to me? Then it dawned on me that my name had a red line because I was Jewish. And he didn't want to see that red line. And he went around, and then he came back and said, pity, you got this new Jew number. Well, then I have to fine you for using this road. Because if I don't, my colleague at the end of the road would have loved to have me not charging you. Cost you 3 marks 30. Now turn around and use the other road. I did. A few days later, I got a letter from the local police station to pay 33 marks 30, 10 times the amount, for having driven on a road which was not permitted to be used by anyone. So I said to my wife, I'm going, he said, you're mad. Why do you go there? Pay your money and pay, you've got a job, you can afford it. Don't be silly. I said, no, I don't. We went there. There were a lot of policemen about. And so I said, could you please tell me why shall I pay 10 times what I paid before? Here's a receipt. And this was the whole atmosphere was enormously unfriendly. And he said, look, don't ask questions, you pay 10 times. If you don't, you can think it over until tomorrow we go to some place where you can wait for it. I didn't want to spend my night there with him. So I said, all right, could I please? And you have to pay in cash. So could I have a receipt? I said, receipt? You can have a kid in your ass. So I knew that was the other type of policeman. And you had, that's why I tell you this story, you had to assess with whom you had to cooperate, or whom you had could oppose, or what could you do. The picture was a completely uneven one, and you could even feel that there was a minority of activists and a majority who wouldn't be involved, in a small minority who would support you. That is a picture of all dictatorships. Dictatorship is always a dictatorship by the minority. And the guilt of the majority is that they are silent. Afterwards, I spoke in Rexing. This was a town which had 33% of Jews. Because in Baden, which was always known for its tolerance, especially the governing royalty, what you would call it, Prince von Baden, was very tolerant. There's a story about the school where Salem, Prince Philip went to, which a Jewish headmaster, Hahn, appointed by him. Yes. Anyhow,
the name of the town was?
Rexingen, R-E-X-I-N-G-E-N. And I spoke there about sport, but officially, they officially and unofficially, I always went to bring unofficial information about immigration and other things, which could not be published, could not be written in a letter, nor did the head of the ex-servicemen allow me to do those things, but I had a lot of information. So I gave a speech then afterwards over a glass of wine or beer, one said, this happened and this happened. And a few days later, I was called up to the Gestapo. The man there was called Kochmann. They mentioned one man, a man called Kutschmann, but I don't think it's the same. And he came up, and he said to me, right up at the Gestapo, little side staircase, you would not tie you. He said, look here, I'm just a professional CID man. I am not involved politically, but it's my job. There, you were reported to have made remarks about the Führer in Rexon, which is a complete city. Don't say city, that's what I got a bit annoyed about my leisurely attitude. I said, look, two men came in at the end. Well, a few men. First, people in uniform came, they were local firemen, and they were Jewish, because the Jews had still participated in voluntary fire service, being 33% of the population. Then two men came in the brown leather coats, their hats on, and they, what we call their bullen, that means CID, so I knew that they were members of the Gestapo, and therefore this report was completely irrelevant. So I left. And a short time later, I received a letter from Gestapo again, signed by Heydrich and initiated by one of the clerks, that for the protection of the German people, my appearance at public meetings was herewith forbidden. And as I taught sports and wrote. I didn't know what that would mean. So I said to my wife, who was not my wife at that time, I'm going to the Gestapo and find out what it is, and somebody will tell me. She said, "You're mad." Then she said, "All right, take your toothbrush." Being annoyed with me. But I went. When I arrived at the Prinz Albert Straße, which was the headquarters, notorious headquarters of the Gestapo, I came to the entrance, and I had a trench coat, and I had my German sports badge, which one normally wore, especially on those occasions. And when they saw that sports badge and me in a trench coat, and I said I had a letter from whatever title he had. I would like to have an explanation. I thought he would send me to one of the clerks who would explain it, especially the one who had signed it, can't have signed it. And to my amazement, two of those SS men with his black tin hats marched me up the big staircase, the main staircase. And when I arrived on the first floor, they knocked at the door, opened the door, and there I saw Heydrich sitting at the end of the room with a Nazi flag behind them, writing. And they clicked their heels and gave the Nazis a salute and marched about turn and marched out and left me alone. And I stood there and he was writing. After a time I said, "Guten Morgen," and he started. "Who are you?" I said, "I had a letter from you and I wanted to know how far this would affect my work." "Yes," I showed him. He said, "What do you want?" I said, "Can I carry on with my work?" "Yes, but I warn you." Out. I didn't argue. I left. And Barnacle wasn't out of the room when he left the receiver. "Guard, come up here." So I knew that the guards had, of course, something done which they shouldn't have done. There are many of those encounters, probably because being in sport and all this things, youth movement and so on, I was probably more doing a lot of talking. I was a bit in a projected position. One of the things I did when I came to South Germany or something to report was one story. If you want to leave Germany, which I know is nearly impossible for my own, that the Nazis want you out and nobody wants you to come in. Situation which we have now in the world. Okay. Even America will only take 25,000 a year. England, where can you go? And I told them the story. And when you go up to the Kurfürstendamm to the now famous Gedächtniskirche, there is a cafe on the corner. I don't know the name anymore, not at the moment, I forget names. And if you go to that cafe, you will see there is a man sitting there who has, I don't know, blue or red tie, so I can't. And if you go to him and give him your passport, which had a J in it for Jew, put in your passport a 1,000 marks note, which was the highest note that is more than £50 now. And he will take out of one pocket a pad, on the other a stamp, and he will stamp into your passport the visa. You don't know what for. He will give it back to you, your passport. Don't open it. Put it in your pocket as quickly as possible and leave. café was called das Romanische Café.
How do you spell that?
Like Roman. Romanisch, Roman. Roman Café, so Romanische Café. And when you're outside and you open your passport on the next lamp post, you may know that you can emigrate to one of the South American states.
Were you trying to get out at this time?
No, I just finished it. Unfortunately, this was known in South America. And we know from Jews who arrived at a South American port that they were returned back. You now know that this had secret through, they didn't know at that time. The people who had to cross the Atlantic had to go back. I sometimes feel, was it the right thing that I passed this information? But I will do the best of my knowledge. In the youth movement, we had a person called Hans-Joachim Schoeps, who was a degree in Jewish philosophy, if it was Jewish, at least in religious philosophy. He came out of the German youth movement, but was expelled because he was Jewish, and he formed an own organization, the Deutsche Vortrag translated the German Advance Guard. And he was very German national orientated, mainly Prussian, because he had this amazing theory that while Prussia is based on the law, so is Judaism. But he was not an Orthodox Jew. But he had quite a reputation already as a philosopher, and he had circles in his father's house. Father was a Sanitätsrat, that means a highly distinguished medical officer, practitioner. By the way, now in Germany, barracks are called after him, Sanitätsrat barracks. And that quite a number of friends of mine, youth movement, perhaps a dozen, we gathered and we talked. Amongst the old non-Jewish one too. And I went there because he was a friend. The level of conversation was very often above my horizon. About who that's true, and I was not deeply interested. And a man came in, a bit older than I was, and said he would like to listen to our conversation. He had heard about it, was terribly interested in the topic, etc., etc. Could he just stay? We couldn't ask him to leave. We couldn't ask him to stay, but the conversation then swung very quickly into very deep religion, philosophy about Karl Barth and whatever it was. And two or 3 days later, I got again a phone call, to come to the Gestapo for Mr. Kuchmann. You know, they knew my name. Hello, Mr. Meyer. Sit down and so on. He was very unhappy that I had to investigate again, but it had been reported that I attended a meeting with that and that place, with that and that persons. And what was going on? So we were talking about that, and that mainly your philosophy of religion, nobody would explain it to you because I didn't understand it myself, you wouldn't get it. He said, all right, but we had a report about it. I said, yes. He said, yes. We had a report from Eichmann. I said, pardon. Somebody attended it, all right? And he reported that you made remarks, or you could make remarks and discuss political issues. I said, oh, that was that man who came in, the one never been there before. I said, maybe? I said, yeah. Again, if somebody comes in and you are not amongst friends, you are very careful. Even if you don't need to be careful, because why should we make remarks about Hitler? They would have talked about immigration or so on. And there was the first time that I heard Eichmann heard, that I, only time that I saw him. Schulz then escaped the last days of the war to Sweden, married there, had two sons, both are back in Germany, and one of them is Professor Hans Jürgen Schulz.
How do you spell his name, please?
S-C-H-O-E-P-S. Schulz returned after the war, became a professor of religions, and received the house on of the Hohenzollern, because he was such a enormously ardent monarchist. And the son of one of the Hohenzollern was one of his students, and saw that he became the author, medaled. But that's another story. So that was the Eichmann story. Yes.
Were you anticipating trying to leave the country at all?
Yeah.
At this time?
I was teaching in Jewish schools, and we were very short. In 1935 again, well-known sportsmen were called to apply for training to become an emergency training a sports teacher. And we had an abundance of teachers in mathematics, of German, and all this, from all the Jewish teachers were expelled from schools. But for some reason, there was a Jewish of Jewish sports teachers. And as the Jewish schools had to follow really the pattern of the German education, they had to be sports teachers. So I applied, secured 70 applications, they took a dozen people, and was supervised by the Education Ministry for Brandenburg. All the people who were teaching there, Jewish sports teachers and so on. And so because of that, then I had difficulties with my job with the ex-servicemen. Because after that letter from Heydrich had arrived, it is said, and I wasn't present, but there was a phone call from the Gestapo that my work was not wanted. And I was called in and told that for financial reasons. They couldn't tell me anything else. For financial reasons, they had closed down the department, which was not quite wrong, but it was not quite correct. And so I became a teacher for sports. And I taught on two or three schools because none of them needed a full-time sports teacher. And one of them was the Lessler Schule, L-E-S-S-L-E-R, Lessler Schule. And I remember there that most of the children, it was a private school. Originally it was a school for a prep school for all children, Jewish and non-Jewish. But when the Jewish children were expelled from school, they extended to become secondary schools, and the non-Jewish children left because they could go somewhere else. So we had a few hundred children. And there came the day when Hitler had birthday. So the head of the school, who had been a head of a large grammar school before, had to give a speech about Hitler's birthday, and the rest of the day we would have to give children a free afternoon. You can imagine how difficult it is for a Jew to talk about Hitler's birthday to Jewish children. But that was a rule that had to be done. This chap was a bit strange altogether. He was half Jewish. After the war, he became a very well political figure in Berlin. So whether he really was forced or whether he wanted to do it or not, we don't know. But it's interesting. And then came the Kristallnacht. By then, my wife and I had married. We lived in different part of the town.